Hi everyone, my name's Natalie, an adult child from the UK. Welcome to the sixth European annual event organised by the ACA European Committee. Today we are hosting eight virtual meetings between 10 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. Central European Time. Please see the full programme at www.acawsoec.org and the link will also be shared in the chat box. This is an ACA speaker meeting on the topic Recovery in Service and Traditions. Please note that for the meeting Serenity, the tech host will keep everyone muted unless they are sharing. And for meeting safety, we have turned off everyone's cameras. If you would like to share, please use the raise hand feature at the appropriate time. You will be unmuted by the tech hosts when it's your turn to speak. Please join me in opening our meeting with the ACA Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me. We meet to share the experience we had as children growing up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home. That experience infected us then, and it affects us today. By practicing the 12 steps, by focusing on the solution, and by accepting a higher power of our understanding, we find freedom from the effects of alcoholism and other family dysfunction. We identify with the problem and learn to live in the solution one day at a time. So, Robin, could you now read the 12 steps, please?
The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over the effects of alcoholism or other family dysfunction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others who still suffer and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks, Robin. Do we have someone who'd like to read the 12 traditions?
Okay, here we are. Hi, I'm Matt Kay from Wisconsin. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on ACA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as expressed in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership in ACA is a desire to recover from the effects of growing up in an alcoholic or otherwise dysfunctional family. Four, each group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or ACA as a whole. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the adult child who still suffers. Six, an ACA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the ACA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, adult children of alcoholics should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. ACA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Adult children of alcoholics has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the ACA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And if you could please scroll up. Thank you. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, films, and other public media. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you for reading. You may have related to our readings, even if there was no apparent alcoholism or addiction in your home. This is common because dysfunction can occur in a family without the presence of addiction. We welcome you. ACA is an anonymous program, and we ask that you respect the 12th tradition on anonymity and confidentiality of each person in this meeting. We do not talk about another person's story or experiences to other people. We ask that who you see here, what is said here, when you leave here, let it stay here. We would also like to remind our speakers that the meeting is being recorded and will be published on acawsoec.org. We do not crosstalk during the sharing time. Crosstalk means interrupting, referring to, or commenting on what another person has said during the meeting. We do not crosstalk because adult children come from family backgrounds where feelings and perceptions were judged as wrong or defective. We accept without comments what others say because it is true for them. We work towards taking more responsibility in our lives rather than giving advice to others. We welcome our speaker, Victor from Sweden. And I will give a 10-minute and 5-minute warning towards the end of your share time. Welcome, Victor.
Thank you very much. My name is Victor, and I'm an old child. And I'm very, very happy to be here. And I just want to like start with a little like disclaimer. These are like my thoughts and my experiences that I will be sharing today. And yeah, you might have other experiences and other thoughts on the subject. And this is not any truth, just my personal experiences. I think it's super fun to be in a international ACA context like this. I've been in ACA meetings in the US and other parts of Europe and Asia. So yeah, it's a very rewarding experience. I will start by talking a little bit about service, and then I will talk a little bit about the traditions. When I came into the program, I understood the basic concept of service, that someone has to open the meeting, someone has to cook, make sure there's coffee, etc. But I did not understand the benefits or there's a deeper meaning to service that I didn't understand back then. And I want to say like the things like up front that I feel is the most important gifts from personally doing service is that it's made me be a part of the program. Like before I did service, I was just basically a tourist. I just like went to meetings 1 minute before and then I left 1 minute after. But when I started doing service, then all of a sudden I started viewing myself as part of the program. And for me, that's been very, very important. I'll add the, sorry, so I'll add some video here. Let's see if that works. Can you see me? Yeah. Cool. I started going to, that was a fundamental shift for me when I actually became part of, because I was the group service representative and the people counted on me to be there for the business meetings, for example, to, you know, report on what was going on. So that's a very, very important first step for me. And then there's some other, and then after a while, I remember fairly early on, even though I was doing service, I was talking to, I was in a business meeting, and who's now my sponsor was saying that he was going to another town, and he went to a meeting, and it turned out to be a business meeting. And I was like, oh, that sucks. I'm like, sorry for you. But he was like, no, it's so nice. I'm so happy that there was a business meeting, because it was interesting. And I thought that, no, like he's just like trying to sound, you know, spiritual, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But so in the beginning, I just did service because people told you're supposed to do it. But after a while, I started realizing these benefits of it. And one, as I said, was becoming part of the group. And another one that it's been a very interesting experience that is hard to imagine before I experienced it, which was that I'm very much a person that is very driven and wants to, you know, get all the best grades and like, you know, do things well, dysfunctionally and non-dysfunctionally. And in service, though, it's taught me to do things for other people without ever, or it's not, and I'm not, humility is not my strongest point either. And it's, but like service, then it was very easy to do things for others without wanting something back, without being manipulative, or just like these basic actions, basically, that I'm, and it's a very fulfilling feeling of like doing something for others. I'm helping spread the message, and like, so others can go to meetings and can recover, but I'm not expecting anything in return. So that has been a very, very rewarding experience. And it's definitely taught me like humility and how to do service in other areas also of my life outside of the program, the meetings. So that's been interesting that I, even though I was very much a people pleaser in a certain way, service has always been fairly easy for me, thanks to other people that I've been doing service with, probably, to do it at a very sane and healthy recovering way, rather than to do it to please others and get, you know, praise. So that's been one of the rewards that I didn't know before I started doing service. I remember specifically one day when I was up late at night before a convention that we had here in Stockholm, and I was writing the meeting agenda, and it was a little like I had taken a little. I felt like I was doing a lot of like the work, and I had like an instinct of, or like a first impulse of like being a little resentful. Like I was sitting up here late at night writing these things, and why is no one else doing it? But that was very quickly like replaced by a feeling of gratitude and pride and self-love. It's like, oh, this is awesome. I'm sitting here, I'm doing these things, I can contribute with this, and this will make other people's recovery happen. And it's just like it's a magical thing. You know, it's not about pride, it's not about like boasting, and it was just like, you know, helping spread the message. That, I think, is a very important feeling for me that I do. I'll get into the traditions more, but the aim when I do service, or not the aim, but like one of the things I think about is the tradition five, like spreading the message. And because I think this is what enables it, you know, to meetings to be open and for people to recover, and like giving back also a lot of the things that I've gotten from the meetings. It's also a very important part of it. And like to summarize that part, I think it's a very interesting way for doing something for others without other motives and without codependence, which is like I'm very codependent in general, but this, I've been blessed to not have that be a part of my service. So yeah, I'm very grateful to learning a different way of achieving stuff and like, you know, sharing my competence and my, and things like, yeah, and things I can do with others without being, in a very non-dysfunctional way. So that's very nice. And I think it builds slowly over time. It helps build my self-esteem and my self-love. Because like if I, you know, I feel that like I putting my resources to something that is very selfless without being codependent is something that is like, oh, wow, I'm such a like little victim. It's like, wow, you're such a great guy. I mean, you're doing these things for others. And it helps build self-love as opposed to, and a lot of other dysfunctional things that I've been doing. And this is also, I want to like point out, I've been very dysfunctional outside of service. When I've been doing service in a very non-dysfunctional way, I've still been struggling with very dysfunctional behaviors outside. But it's like, this has been like a safe haven where I've got to practice a less dysfunctional way of working. So that's some of the things in service. And I've also, on a more like, sober tone, it's like it's also that it's I found I, my experience is that it's extremely important for people's recovery to do service. Like I've been a sponsor and I've been sponsoring, and of all the people that I've sponsored, no one that didn't do service completed the 12 steps. There were people that did service that also did not complete the 12 steps, but no one that I've sponsored who didn't do service completed the 12 steps. So it's not a rule or anything, but I do, you know, it's like it's my experience. That's what it is. That if the people that do, if you don't do service, or like my sponsors who didn't do service had a harder time completing the steps. So that's in a way also, it's an important, it shows that service is important basically. Yeah, I said that a little bit, but I think one super important part of being part of a group for me is that I've had like I've gotten some friends in recovery, and my sponsor and like a lot of other friends through service has been like the gate that opened, having to call people, talk to people. That has been, that's also been super rewarding and extremely important in my personal recovery to have a network of people that I can rely on, that I can call, and that I can help me recover basically. So that's some thoughts about service, my personal experiences. And then moving on to my also again personal experience and thoughts around the traditions. Generally, I think some of the traditions are straightforward and very clear and easy to follow. That it's like, it's not, we shouldn't accept outside donations. We shouldn't like have our name be in, that we use our name in other contexts. So I think those traditions, I don't have a lot to say about, because I think that they are fairly straightforward and they serve their purpose exceptionally well. But there are some traditions that I think have more, that I have more thoughts around. And, firstly, I'd like to talk about the third tradition, and I'm going to read it. The only requirement for membership in ACA is a desire to recover from the effects of growing up in an alcoholic or otherwise dysfunctional family. And I think this, in combination with the fourth, and we'll get back to that later, is that it's like, it's very inclusive. Anyone who basically identifies with the laundry list or the 20 questions, and you know, they could probably might have had a dysfunctional upbringing, and then they're welcome in ACA, regardless of specific addictions or specific patterns in the family. So I think that's very powerful. The fact that ACA is welcoming to everyone who identifies as have been raised in a dysfunctional family. And sometimes you don't have to understand that yourself. The fact that you're identifying with the laundry list or the, you know, then you can, you attend meetings and it'll come out that maybe you have had a dysfunctional upbringing. So I think that's a very, very beautiful tradition. And it's like, I have a lot of friends in ACA who would not have maybe the specific, the classic, you know, a parent who's an addict or something else, but they're nonetheless adult children and they've been recovering in a very beautiful way here in ACA. So I think that's a very nice thing. And it also ties into the second, the fourth tradition, and specifically the last part of it. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs that I don't view, or like personally for me, it's not a single problem, like a single addiction or a single, it's like, it's multiple things, work, relationships, you know, like a lot of things can be dysfunctional and a little addictive maybe. But what I like about ACA is that it's like all encompassing. Everyone is welcome. And like you can, or like we, you know, if people need to go to some other 12-step program for a while to take care of their, that specific addiction, that's, you know, that's part of the modeling in ACA. So I think that's very, very beautiful that you can, you know, you can be in other programs as well. There's no like, oh no, yeah, this is the only program, this is the way we do it. It's very open. It's very like, yeah, whatever you need to do, kind of. But personally, for me, the core is in the ACA parts. So that's that's, I think that's very, very nice about the third and the fourth traditions. And then the tradition that I personally feel is probably the most important one to me is the fifth tradition. And that's each group has one primary purpose: to carry its message to the elder children who still suffers. And that is because it's been a very big, I've experienced a big change in my home group and like, yeah, personally in meetings. And it's been a focus. And like to me, the message that we're trying to, you know, to spread to people is the solution that there is a, if you've been raised in a dysfunctional family, there is a solution to that. There is hope. There is a different way to live. And what the change that I've experienced in the meetings that I've seen, like my personal experience, is that I've also experienced it myself. It's like I had initially a focus on, initially I came into the program and there's a lot of denial, and I talked about what actually happened and that stuff. But then I got kind of stuck, and I was mostly turned into going to meetings and just sharing about my problems and the issues and these, you know, I'm an adult child, these are some problems that I'm suffering with. And then I realized that there's actually, that is not maybe that the primary purpose like of the meetings, because it's also important to share the solution and like to take part in the solution. And I'm very happy that people did that in meetings that I went to. Because that made me like, I had a person became my first sponsor, say after a meeting, and I was like, oh yeah, it's not really, I don't know, I'm still struggling, it's not working very well. And she said like, so how many meetings a week do you go to? I was like, oh, one. She's like, oh, you have to go to more meetings. Like, okay. And then like, oh, and have you done the steps? I was like, no. She's like, you got to do the steps. And I'm just like, okay. So someone like, it was a bit like, yeah, it was, and that's, I'm very, very grateful for that, for doing the steps. Otherwise I would have continued to struggle. And it's not, like sharing, to me, it's twofold. Like I'm sharing my experience and my pain and my suffering, but there's also importance to share the message that there is a way, there's a solution, there's something else to be found, and how I've found that and how that works and like what it's doing for me today. So I think that is I've had a mind shift personally from more problem focused to problems. I share them, but maybe I generally tend to call my sponsor or call another ACA friend and talk about, you know, oh, I have a problem at work or, you know, in a relationship. And then I maybe talk more. I mentioned the problem at the meeting, but I also try to talk about like how I address that problem, what I do, and like how, other things, yeah, I try to focus on the solution of it, so that, because that's what I needed when I came to the meetings in the beginning. I needed here. It took me a couple of meetings to identify with others. Like, okay, they have similar experiences. They work in a similar way, but then I needed the solution out because I was not in a good spot. I was very happy that people did share their way. And like, oh, to me, the solution is like easy. It's like, no, it's simple, not easy. It's like working the steps with a sponsor, calling out to other ACA members and attending meetings regularly. And so that's simple, but it's not always easy. So I'm happy that people like kept telling me that. So since that's where the major benefits, I got a lot of relief from coming to meetings and sharing initially, but when I started taking part of the solution, that's where the real things started happening. That's another share. Those are some thoughts about that. I want to talk a little bit about the 11th tradition. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, films, and other public media. And this is very, very good and very brilliant in the sense that I shouldn't go out and say, like, this is my name, I'm an ambassador of ACA, for example. But I have a feeling it's sometimes taken a little too literally, or that like the attraction rather than promotion, that we are a little too careful in, they're a little too anonymous in the ACA programs at times, and that it's, we're doing very little outreach, that's just like I'm not sure how it's supposed to work and what the feeling is, but I have a feeling that we can sometimes hide behind we shouldn't go out and spread the message because that's promoting, while it's more, I think personally, I feel like it's, my personal view on this is that it's about sharing the message, like sharing that there, this ACA exists. This is the, if you have these problems, there is a, you know, there's a solution for some people. But not like you need the solution, but just like, oh, this is information. I mean, like this exists. If you have these characteristics, then, you know, this is a possible solution for you. And my sponsor always like reminds me that ACA is a program for people who want it, not who need it. Like it's, I have had a lot of friends, family, et cetera, that I think would need the program, but if they don't want it, there's no use. There's like, it's for people who want it, but there's probably a lot of people out there who want the program, but they are not aware of it. So that's a, this is a thing that I've thought of. I can't say I'm doing anything in particular to change that, but it's, just like some thoughts around that. But there's also in that, I feel that the growth in how ACA is, at least my personal experience, is a lot of people come into ACA from other TWSA programs. And not like some people come in like straight off from the street, but also a lot of people have had experiences in previous programs. And yeah, I don't think that is a bad thing either, that that people come, that there's like ACA for some people is the second, you know, second phase in their recovery. I think that is an important part, though, that we could, that's also somewhere where we could, it doesn't have to be necessarily to have people come in from this, more people come in from the street, but could also be to spread the message to other 12-step groups and in other, you know, communities. That's also like a thought that I've had around this, the attraction. But I'm definitely super grateful that we are erring a little more on the careful side than on the too promotional, like you need this. This is because I'm very, I don't like that at all. The concept of like, you know, pushing the solution down someone's throat. So, yeah, that's those are some thoughts around the 11th tradition. And then the 12th. So this, yeah, I'm going to read it too. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So this ties back to what I said a little bit, or like it ties back to a lot of things. And I think it's a little vague. It's not like super clear. Like, what is it? You know, what's the spiritual foundation? Sure. But like, yeah, like principles before personalities. I don't know. It's not as straightforward as we shouldn't take money from outside entities. That's a lot more clear in my mind. But the anonymity, for example, there are some basic things that are super clear to me. That is the, you know, you never share who was at a meeting. Like I, you know, still do that to this day. I have friends who are in recovery, and I'm, you know, my fiance know those friends, and I would like, you know, say that, oh, I talked to this person, and she's like, oh, when you do that? And I was like, oh yeah, just, you know, on the phone or something, you know. I still like, or like, oh, I talked to one person and they said this thing. I mean, and like it's still ingrained. It's a super important principle, I think, even for people that, you know, that know each other. I think it's, yeah, I think that's it's a very, very easy, like simple principle, and it's quite easy to keep too. And then also not share what people say. Like this person said this, I want to like make the distinction, because I share like basically everything I'm saying today, someone else has, you know, shared, and I've listened. It's like, that sounds good. I mean, and so like, I definitely think that that doesn't mean to not share what people are saying. You know, I mean, if something, you know, attaches to you, I mean, then I think it's great to share that, but it doesn't have to be like this person said this or this person said that, like, so, and I think it's good to have, like, when you have people that are public figures, et cetera, they can still be going to meetings and they can also recover, which is amazing. So I think like the anonymity is, yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic principle. Great tradition.
10 minutes.
Yeah. Cool. Perfect. But then there's some other interesting consequences of the anonymity that I've experienced over the years. And one thing is that in ACA business meetings, for example, or in meetings in general, sometimes things get very infected. You have people that get offended and upset, sometimes for valid reasons and sometimes for less valid reasons. And they you know, storm out of the meeting, they get upset, and that someone says something. And that I've experienced this a lot of the times myself in meetings. And I think it's a natural process, but I think a beautiful thing about anonymity is that means that those things, these, you know, when you have things happen, I mean, when people are recovering, there's going to be arguments, and people are sometimes going to be like, oh, I overreacted, I underreacted, you know, we're dealing with it, we're recovering. So, but the good thing is that these, say that you have a business meeting that spirals out of control, you know, everyone leaves. Then the next meeting, an hour later, we'll have no clue. Maybe someone told them, but they don't know who they were. They don't know who stormed out. It'll be just reset. So like these infections that otherwise could have like spread like wildfire. Oh, did you hear that? Like, imagine if you could share on the business meeting who did what. I mean, you know, oh, actually, have you heard that this person did this? And you'll be like gossip, and that'll be like infecting the entire program in the city, and you know what I mean? So I think that's a beautiful thing, that we can handle these little meltdowns in business meetings, for example. And the people that are at the meeting, they have to handle it and deal with it, but it doesn't affect other people, so that the program is more resilient to these little conflicts and these little growth pains. And it's also, one person could storm out and be outrageous, or like, you know, and people get, you know, scared of that person and feel like, I feel unsafe. But then that person recovers a little more, and they can be in a meeting, and then that person gets another chance. I mean, that then someone else doesn't have to be tainted by this rumor about how this person behaves badly, is ill-tempered. So I think it's a beautiful thing with the anonymity, that it's like, there's drama can't really propagate through the meetings. Like you can hear about like, oh, this business meeting was a train wreck. Like everyone was, you know, very upset, but you don't know who were there except for the person like that shared about it maybe. So I think that's, very beautiful. Like, yeah, it's an interesting thing that I've observed over the years that like drama doesn't, it's hard for it to spread because you never know who, like, oh, you're like in the beginning, it's like trying to figure out like, oh, how could that be? And then it's like, no, you don't. It's because it's, and then it dies. You know what I mean, so that's, yeah. And it's like, and also like, yeah, tying back to the service, the anonymity of, I think that's what gave me this very rewarding experience is that, you're doing service without, very anonymously, right? You're like, you rarely know who, it's not that the person who wrote the you know, the meeting agenda, it's not going to like sign it at the end, like written by, or the person who, you know, opened the meeting is not always, you don't always know who that was. I mean, so it's very anonymous. You do things, you know, quite like under the radar kind of. I think that's also a positive effect of the anonymity, that there's no credit to be taken by anyone. And yeah, so that including myself, and like, you don't know who's doing what service where. And that's, I think that's a very nice thing that has some positive effects too. So that basically, yeah, that ties back to the service part of, doing it without taking credit, but still getting all the more benefits. Because when I try to take credit, and if I'm like lusting for like, oh, I want to get recognition, that's not what I actually need. I need to do this selflessly. And that's, you know, that act itself is what I need. That is what nurtures me. But when I do things for like to get rewards and to get like acknowledged, that's not the right motivation for doing it. So I don't know. I think I have a few minutes left now.
5 minutes.
5 minutes left. Cool. I can share just a little bit about like what service I've done in different parts. Not super exciting, but But it's been very rewarding in different ways. I've been the group service representative. This is the first position that I got in my home group, and that was what made me like, oh, I'm part of this group now. You know, I mean, I can't just like, because that's the thing. I had a pattern of just like going randomly to meetings, avoiding becoming like known or a part of a group. But when I became like, okay, I have a service position in this group, I kind of went to that meeting as like, okay, well, I'm now like, and then I inevitably you start recognizing people. So that definitely like got me into the program. I became like a person that people knew in that meeting, which is super frightening, obviously, to me, but it's also very rewarding. And then I've been treasurer as well, like counting the money in the meetings. I've been doing some service in the Swedish Intergroup, working with the website. That's been also very fun to get like a national context and have people, we always meet every like twice a year on these, like not right now, but normally, and in these conferences that we have in Sweden. And it's like, it's a tight knit group, and we also like sometimes go out like a weekend and like do some service work together and hang out. And it's a super rewarding, more immersed experience. And then I've been working on the translation of the Big Red Book to Swedish, which also been very rewarding. I'm like sitting and translating. It's like, yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, if you read a sentence like five times, it's really like, okay, this is starting to land. So that's also been very rewarding. But then also like I open the meetings. Chair meetings. I do things like that, just like the basic things. And I also, it was very fun to be part of the 2019, last year's annual ACA World Conference. And I was also helping out on the website there. Well, that was super cool to be part of that group and to visit, or like, yeah, to go to Malmö then, and yeah, meet all other adult children from all over the world. So as I started, I think it's a beautiful thing that we are all, I can go to meetings anywhere. People have different formats, but it's the same people there, you know. So that's, yeah, that's, on that note, I think I'll conclude my share of this topic. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Victor. We will now open the meeting for sharing and questions. Please use the raise hand function if you'd like to speak. We encourage ACA members from the many countries we have present to share openly about their experiences. To allow as many people a chance to share during the meeting, we ask each person to limit their sharing for 2 minutes. Please acknowledge the timekeeper when time is given and wrap up your share. Who would like to share first with raised hands? We actually had a question in the chat box. How long has Victor been in ACA? And I believe Frederick said 11 years. Is that correct, Victor?
That's correct, yeah.
Great, thank you. Who would like to share? Joanna?
I think Dahlia is... Joanna, lower her hand again.
Hi, this is Dahlia, adult child in Israel. Hello, everybody. thank you, Victor, for your inspiring and candid and informative presentation. Very helpful for me. I related to a lot of your share. And thank you also for your service and everybody that is doing service to carry this message. That's how it gets to me, and that's how I help others to carry it on. For me, what came up, this is more like a share than a question, but I'd love if you have anything to relate to that. Doesn't need have to. It connected to me to the previous presentation about the adult child, because I feel for me, particularly in ACA, doing service, one, it is nurturing my inner child, nurturing the inner children of others. The whole idea of having wounded inner children that need healing, and that my healing can be done and does happen while I'm doing it together with others. So, and I also feel it as on the receiving side. When I receive service from others in ACA, I feel it as nurturing for my inner child. So that's like another tool I feel that connecting to my inner child and developing trust and relationship with her and strengthening this connection, and also becoming a loving parent, because it is a loving parent action to do service in ACA. So to carry on this message that we do have results and effects of growing in dysfunctional families and can heal from them together. And it also connects to the traditions I feel about doing this inner child work, because the tradition for me, and I learned it also especially in ACA, is creating safety, a safe environment, and in a very way that is very comfortable for the inner child, because it's not really ruled, you know, really like strict ones and then authority and ones that are implementing them and then punishment and all that. No, there's none of that. However, it's traditions, and it's my responsibility and my loving parent's responsibility to keep them, so my inner child and other people's inner children can have a place to heal. And also, okay, I'll wrap up. Yeah. I'm wrapping. Thank you. So, yeah, thank you. If you have anything to share about that, I'd love to. Otherwise, thank you, everybody, for being here and listening to me and doing this. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, totally. That I definitely relate to the traditions creating safety. And I think that's a very important, it's been a very important part of receiving service for me from others that have set boundaries and have, like there's important, you don't want the authority, but you still want someone to be the adult in the room, right? To say, okay, this is acceptable and this is not acceptable. Like if someone comments on another share, to have the person who's chairing the meeting maybe come in and say, like, I just want to remind you, we don't comment on other people's shares. And that's scary, but to me, those people doing those actions have given me a lot of safety. And I feel very safe in an environment when I feel that people are taking responsibility and making sure that the traditions are, and the guidelines that they are, we are reminded of them. So I totally agree that some structure creates stability too, or the feeling of safety. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Thank you.
And the next one is Maybrit. I think I recognize that name. Welcome, Maybrit.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Very strange to be just another regular ACA member. thank you so much for your service, Victor. Thank you for your inspirational talk about the traditions. Having done a lot of service, it really helped me grow, and I particularly loved the 12th tradition, putting principles before personalities, because that took me out of the equation. I didn't go to my ego to perform. I did it for others. And I was asked numerous of times, how come you do so much service? And I could say without any quivering that I was doing service from a place of gratitude, and that I wanted this program to succeed and be there for the next generation of people coming in. And that's why I worked so hard, because it saved my life. And the traditions are sure guidelines. And it is my experience that when things, shit hits the fan in a group or in a country or whatever, it is because people have no knowledge of the traditions. So having been part of the process of introducing ACA to Indo countries, I found it really informative to translate the traditions as some of the starting points when you set up a committee to translate, because that actually keeps focus on what is at hand, that it doesn't become a power trip for somebody, or this goes because I say so, or whatever, but that it comes a common effort to translate, and that we as inner children have to remind ourselves not to put our personalities out there, even if we make mistakes, because it can have devastating effects to people, to other people. And I'm just so grateful for this. I'm just so grateful for this program. And I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody still doing a lot of service. And thank you for being there. Thank you.
Okay, we go to Paul R. Manchester.
Hello, it's Paul from Manchester. Thanks very much for inviting me to be in this session through advertising. The thing around the traditions and service, and I'd welcome your thoughts on this one. The longer I stayed, I've been in ACA for about 3 years, but the longer I stayed in ACA and the more I tried to live in the solution and do my step work, I was getting involved with ACA in the north of England. And I really enjoyed that. But as I got deeper into my step work, I started to get emotionally quite vulnerable and emotionally quite less resilient. But because I'd committed myself and I see the value of service, sometimes It's like when I was a year ago able to provide service, suddenly I was struggling to do it. And I've learned a lot over this this summer, being part of some of the American things as well. And the people that I got to know in service last year and the year before, I come to there and come to them in a more honest way. But sometimes I struggle with service, doing it, not the principle of it, when I'm struggling emotionally as a result of doing step work. I'd just love your thoughts on that, please, or how that affects you when you suddenly go through a rocky time. I'll leave it there. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I personally have had more, I think, service. I don't generally, like, I've had the fortune to not do service that I've been too straight. I haven't had to go out and push myself or be near my limits to do service. I've always done services. To me, has more been a lot more of giving time than doing, than accomplishing something that is challenging for me. Sometimes I get challenges and I have to deal with that, but I guess I've been fortunate so that the service that I've been doing has been more, for example, taking the key to a meeting, is just about like having me, I have to get it, like, remember that, put a reminder in and then go and do that service. So I think, for me, the service hasn't been, I haven't pushed myself, in a way so that when I have been struggling, I've still been able to do the service because it's been on a level that is fairly routine. I mean, it's like brushing, you know, you attend a meeting, I do things that I don't have to perform in order to, I have to show up and I have to do the basics, but it's not about, I don't feel that I have to like push myself in doing it. So therefore I feel like I haven't personally, it's been, yeah, still manageable for me to do service and in tough times. And but more, I wouldn't take up a big service position if I was in having a, like, you know, struggling the steps or stuff like, yeah, I've had experiences with when it's been very rough working the steps, then maybe it would do things like get the key to the next meeting or things like that, rather than get engaged in a massive new service position. But yeah, so that's my personal experience on that note. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. And the last person, you have about 2 minutes, and that's Mona. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Hi, I'm Mona Adolfchild. And thank you very much for this speech. It was very interesting to listen to, and thanks for service for organizing this meeting. I don't know if it's a question or a reflection, but I have been struggling a little bit with service. Because one of my laundry list traits is that I am overly responsible. So every time I join a group, I feel like I need to take as much responsibility as everybody else and a little bit more. So I tried to practice not doing that, which meant not doing as much service, and then of course I feel a little bit guilty, and I overvalue the service I can't do. And this, I do open meetings, I read, I take notes in business meetings or whatever, but like taking the key has been difficult to me. We have meetings in the morning and I have a sleeping disorder, so I guess I'm struggling between overcoming my compulsive need to take too much responsibility and the beneficial part of doing service. So if there are any comments on that, I would be grateful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I relate to the feeling of taking responsibility and feeling responsible for meetings. When I had done, I worked as a group service representative and then as a treasurer in the same group. And then I went out abroad for 6 months and I was like, oh, when I come back, this group is not going to be alive anymore because I'm like basically carrying it. And I came back and it was all alive and well, obviously. They didn't need me. So then the feeling that I'm, and that's something I've learned over the time, that my personal, the value of what I do in service. That's, I think, the beautiful thing about service. It's not, it doesn't require that. The most needed service is, doesn't require like chairing a meeting, for example. Doesn't need to, you can just read the book. Anyone can basically do that. So, but then it is a challenge to match. I try to feel when I'm in that situation of feeling, okay, they ask who can take the key. And I feel like, okay, I always have to like inventory myself. Like, okay, why am I not taking the key now? And over the years, sometimes it is that I'm just like, oh, well, I'm just being like personal. I'm like this all my personal, but I'm just like, ah, I don't really want to do that. That's like, sounds like tough. I don't want to like have to do, you know, set an alarm and be able to come next week. And then it's like, okay, I should probably do it. But sometimes it's like, no, there's a valid reason that I'm not doing the service. So, but I think I have to, and the reason I have that intuition myself is because I've talked to other people. So like talk to others, like, oh, I'm thinking about doing service in this way. Is that, and just like, I think I need external feedback because it's very hard for me to myself know, like, am I doing this for the right or the wrong reason? And then when I've talked to people, or I talk to my sponsor over and over and over and over, then eventually I get a feeling myself, like I'm, you know, higher power, et cetera, other program friends, then I get a feeling in myself, oh, I should take the key or I should not take the key. I mean, it's like, it becomes clearer to me, but I need that talk to other people and discuss and what is the reason? So I think, like getting that external talk to other people about it and sharing, not necessarily on the meetings, but more like on a phone call, so we can get like some feedback on that. That's what I tend to do in these situations when I'm unsure what my motives are or how I should do this. But it always has come from self love, though, not like, oh, I'm a band, I'm the hero child who's like saving this group. Sometimes I also feel like if a group can't survive without me, then the group is probably not meant to be either. I believe that like the program is very, it's like it sorts itself out. If you have a healthy group of people do service, that group will survive. If you have an unhealthy group of people don't do service, that group will close down. So, and that's probably for the best, because if there's no service, there's no recovery either. So I think things sort themselves out in the program is also my experience. I have faith in that, like, I want to be part to do service with others. I'm not going to do it myself and carry this whole group on my shoulders. That I don't think that was ever the idea. Yeah, those are some thoughts come to mind. Thank you.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Thanks, everyone. We've come to the end of this speaker meeting. I would like to thank our speaker, Victor, and everyone who has shared today and all those who have been of service in supporting this virtual event to happen. Please check the ACAWSOEC.org website for information about the MP3 recordings for these meetings. Do we have a volunteer to read the promises, please?
Thank you. The promises. One, we will discover our real identities by loving and accepting ourselves. Two, our self-esteem will increase as we give ourselves approval on a daily basis. Pass.
I think Nettie also had their hand up, if Nettie would like to continue.
Nettie.
Hello. Hello, I'm Nettie. ACA, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, thank you. Three, fear of authority figures and the need to people please will leave us. Four, our ability to share intimacy will grow inside us. Five, as we face our abandonment issues, we will be attracted by strengths and become more tolerant of weaknesses. Six, we will enjoy feeling stable, peaceful, and financially secure. Seven, we will learn how to play and have fun in our lives. 8, we will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. 9, healthy boundaries and limits will become easier for us to set. 10, fears of failure and success will leave us as we intuitively make healthier choices. 11, with help from our ACA support group, we will slowly release our dysfunctional behaviors. 12, gradually with our higher power's help, we will learn to expect the best and get it. Thank you.
Thanks for reading, Helen and Nettie. We remind ourselves of the seventh tradition. Every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. To make a seventh tradition contribution by using a PayPal account, please visit our website, acawsoec.org/donations. And I believe the details will be put in the chat box. Thank you. We now have a lunch break until 2 p.m. European time, Central European time. Our next meeting at 2 p.m. has the theme of living the steps in your life. Please join me in closing our meeting by saying the ACA Serenity Prayer in the language you prefer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me. Thank you, everybody. Go safely.